She nodded, and two tears rolled out of the corner of her eyes. Then, okay.
Okay?
I'll be your canary.
What?
He was unprepared for her sudden change of heart. I know what it's like. I mean, not exactly, but I told you my story. My parents are gone. My aunt and uncle are shit. I took off the night of my 18th birthday and never went back. Cormac knew he was a hypocrite to ask, but he didn't understand why she would do something so reckless.
You never told me why you left.
He noticed her face pale even as she shrugged to suggest the answer was no big deal. I overheard them talking downstairs in the kitchen. My uncle said something to my aunt about me turning 18 and what were they going to do with the little vermin now. She made air quotes as she recounted their words. My aunt acknowledged that I had been a disappointing experiment, but that he should be patient because if I was going to be useful to them, they'd know soon enough. Cormac clenched his jaw, not trusting his emotions. They called their own kin. Megan.
Vermin?
She continued. Do you know how hard I worked for them growing up? And then they go and say that shit? I wasn't going to stick around for more of it. It might have been impulsive to take off without a plan, but I don't regret it.
Okay, he said. Okay. I'm glad you don't regret it, and I'm glad you're out of there. But Megan, what does this have to do with helping me find my target?
She blinked, and a sad smile spread across her face. Don't you see? I have nowhere to go, but you do. I'm agreeing to be your canary to help you get back home. Cormac bowed his head, hating to hear her say it so bluntly. He didn't know what made him crazier. That she had no home, or that he had none to give her.
I don't know if I can ever do that, but if you help me find the Black Castle, I promise I'll take care of you, he said, brushing the hair back from her face and kissing her again. You can trust me, Maclushla.
He lowered his head slowly and gently touched his lips to hers, and he felt her body slowly softening beneath him. She blinked up at him. Hopefully feeling how momentous that one simple kiss was because, to him, it was everything. You've called me that before, she whispered. He kissed her again, and this time he heard her heart leap.
It's an endearment. Literally, my pulse.
My pulse. Her hands swept up his sides, then slid over his chest, before combing into his hair. I like that. She kissed him back, and her legs separated. His hips fell through, and he groaned at the wet heat he found seeping through her panties. She pulled up her knees, and one hand drifted down, cupping his bare ass. When Cormac felt the first trembles of his control slipping, he tensed and pulled away. Megan put her hand behind his head and pulled him back to her. His hand plowed into the hair at the side of her head, and he continued his kiss with hard, demanding need that she reciprocated with every move.
God, had she been wanting this as much as he had?
If so, she would understand his intensity. And when the tip of his tongue touched hers, all bets were off. Megan moaned, opening for him, and he nabbed the opportunity, pushing his tongue into her mouth, tasting, sucking, exploring. He growled down her throat. He traced her teeth with his tongue, sucked her bottom lip between his, and pulled even more sounds out of her, each one spurring him on to take just a little bit more. He slipped his left hand inside the elastic at the back of her panties and pulled her against his nakedness, grinding in. Then the kiss moved to her jaw, her neck, her collarbone.
You're beautiful. So beautiful, he murmured as his lips moved over her t-shirt and found her nipple hardening under the soft cotton.
Her arms moved between them and she grabbed the edge of her t-shirt, ripping it up over her head and tossing it away. His head came down and he lapped at her nipple once before sucking it into his mouth, loving how her hips jerked and rose in response.
Christ, I can smell your arousal again, he said. His fingers curling into her ass, The beast inside of him prowled and rippled at his edges. That scent. Devastating. His hand moved between them and he slid one finger inside her, curling it against her upper wall and dragging it forward. Then he raised his hand between them. His finger glistened with her juices, and he slowly pushed it inside his mouth. She watched, unblinking, then groaned deep and lusty. The look and taste and sound of her was nearly Cormac's undoing. His cock surged upward and grazed impatiently against her opening. "Cormac," she said, her eyes flashing with surprise. He knew why. His gums burned from the pressure of his teeth slowly elongating. He was starting to slip, and she saw it. Her hands came up and put pressure at his shoulders. "Cormac, you need to stop. You're changing."
"Aye," he agreed on an exhale. And at that, Cormac closed his eyes and inhaled a long, slow breath, pushing the hound back to center. His grip relaxed, though his bare chest continued to heave with exertion. "You can trust me," he said again, hopefully driving his point home with this showing of control. Despite the fact he wanted her, he would not take this any farther. And rightly so. As the fog of lust slowly lifted, he saw the scene from outside himself. How had he let it get that far? He never lost control like that. But with Megan, nothing went according to plan. While he could imagine how perfect it would be to join his body with hers, how right he'd sworn an oath, he promised himself, and indirectly the memory of his family, that he would have no distractions. He would seek no pleasure for himself until they were all avenged. He looked down at Megan's wide-eyed face, and he rolled off of her. He did not deserve this kind of happiness. Not when he had yet to fully atone. The only way to ever return home would be through sacrifice, self-denial, and with heads on a spike, one for each of the lives the Black Castle had taken from him. Megan whispered, "Maybe we should go to sleep." Cormac didn't answer right away, and after a second, he felt her roll onto her side, giving him her back as if his silence had hurt her feelings. He turned his head to apologize and to tell her good night, but before he could, his throat filled with bile. There, tattooed on the back of her bare shoulder, were those two symbols he'd never wanted to see again in his whole miserable life. A bright green shamrock crossed by a sword.
Chapter 15. Megan. Megan's dreams had always been more vivid than her waking hours. Until recently, real life had been like wandering dazed and confused from one gray room to another, always searching for something beautiful, but only finding pain. Then one day she opened a door and found Cormac McConnell standing there. It was as if she'd endured a long power outage, only for the house lights to come on all at once. Now real life was more impossible, and less explainable than anything she could have ever dreamt up. That was why she wasn't sure if she was dreaming or awake when she saw the woman from her dreams again, this time standing at the foot of the bed. Her back was still turned, but then, for the first time, the woman turned over her shoulder and looked Megan dead in the eye. "Mom?" Megan could hardly believe it. No, wait. This couldn't be real. Her mother was dead. Her aunt told her she was dead. "What are you doing here?" A wolf howled mournfully in the distance. Her mother turned toward the sound, then returned her vacant gaze to Megan. "I'm looking for you." "What?" Megan asked. "I'm looking for you," her mother said. Megan woke on a gasp and sat straight up in bed, her eyes open but unfocused. Her mother wasn't there. Of course she wasn't. Megan's neck and shoulders were covered in a fine sheen of sweat. She reached out for Cormac, but the space where he'd lain was empty. "Cormac?" She listened for sounds of him in the cottage, but there was no water running, no clatter from the kitchenette. no stoking of a fire in the hearth room. Then she remembered what he'd said about needing to get up early to make a report to some kind of council. She relaxed into the pillows and tried to recapture the new details from her dream. The woman was her mother. Had she always been? Or had her subconscious added that just now? Probably the latter. She wanted to see her mother's face, just like she wanted her to be out there, somewhere, looking for her. She rolled over and realized she was in nothing but her panties, and the memories of last night pushed the dream clear out of her head. The feel of Cormac's hands on her. It was something she'd had in only small doses before, and it was a good thing it came on slowly because the heat of him nearly blew her mind. His hot, demanding kiss, the way his hands moved over her breasts, the feel of him hard and insistent between her legs. Almost involuntarily, her hand slid down her belly and cupped her mound, giving it a squeeze to quell the growing ache. She closed her eyes, and her legs fell open. She imagined him coming home, walking in to find her like this. What would happen then? Makusla, your pussy is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. She groaned in response to the fantasy and swirled her finger over her swelling clit. With her other hand, she cupped her breast and rolled her nipple in a tight pinch. I want to taste you. I want to feel your juices running over my chin. Megan's hand went into overdrive, tightening her secret muscles, curling her up like a spring, drawing her tighter, tighter, until, with a moan, her orgasm burst like a cataract over a dam, throbbing and pulsing in such intense and beautiful waves that it seemed like forever before she came down. Even then, she couldn't open her eyes. And before she knew it, she fell asleep. Megan blinked her eyes open, confused by the amount of sunlight in the room. She reached for her phone and was shocked to see it was afternoon. The cottage was still quiet, and there were no texts from Cormac. Cormac? No answer. She pulled on her clothes and wandered into the other room. What the hell could be taking him so long? Then she saw the note on the table, and her lips curled up into a smile. It was sweet of him to leave her a note. More old-fashioned and definitely more romantic than a text. She picked it up and read the words, her smile fading as her eyes moved across the page. Nice try, but I'm not going to fall for your trick. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, and oh yeah, watch your back. I did. See. Megan read the note again, this time slowly, but it didn't change anything. Nice try? What trick? You have got to be shitting me. She read the note again, then she crumpled it into a ball and chucked it across the room. Okay, deep breath. She knew this moment would come. It always did. You could only couch surf for so long before someone told you to take a hike, but what the hell, Cormac? Why beg her to stay? Why convince her to help him with his insane mission to avenge his family? And for that matter, why dump all this crazy-ass information on her if he was just going to change his mind? Fickle much? What the hell was last night all about? Good Lord. She would have gladly gone her entire life not knowing half of the shit he laid on her last night. Well, maybe she dodged a bullet. Maybe the male she were as fucked up as the male Podrigs. It would be just like her to fall for it. Megan marched into the bedroom and packed her suitcase. She would not cry. There was no way in hell she was going to cry. She pulled on her fleece and her socks and shoes. The world might be more dangerous than she ever knew, but she'd take that over this bullshit any day. She was a tough girl. She'd been on her own. She'd traveled. Now that she knew who and what to avoid, she shouldn't have any more trouble. And she'd take Cormac's advice. She would watch her back. The first tear came, but she wiped it away. No fucking way. There was no way she was going to let Cormac McConnell make her cry. She slammed the front door behind her and stomped off to the rental office to, hopefully, buy some snacks for the road. The tiny bell over the door tinkled as she entered, but there was no one in the reception lobby. A tongue of smoke licked up from an incense burner on the counter, and a thick, cloying smell filled the room, nearly choking her. Behind the counter, a red curtain closed off an interior office. "Hello?" she called out, setting her suitcase on the floor. "Is anyone here?" There was a soft shuffling sound from somewhere deep behind the curtain. While she waited, she looked around to see if there was a vending machine with granola bars or maybe bags of pretzels. All she found was a basket of complimentary hard candy. She loaded her pockets, but one piece bounced off the counter and landed on the desk behind it. Megan leaned over the counter to grab it, but her hand froze in midair when she spotted something familiar. On the desk, tucked out of normal view, stood a small block print of a shamrock crossed by a sword. It was the same image that hung inside her aunt and uncle's front door. It was the same image she got tattooed on her shoulder blade the day she left their home for good. A reminder of where she'd been, but also an award for having put them far behind her. Megan raised her hand to her neck and scratched at her irritated skin when the thick curtain parted and a young man emerged. He looked surprised to see her, and then wary. She spotted the name tag pinned to his shirt. Riley. The guy who'd called about the so-called dead animal on their doorstep. She felt the need to say something about that, but before she could, he spoke. "You're leaving?" Her body lurched infinitesimally with recognition. Riley was also the good-looking guy she'd seen eating at the diner days earlier. The one with the lush lashes whom she'd sketched while he ate with his large family. He didn't seem to recognize her at all. "I am," she said as the prickly, itchy feeling grew stronger on her neck, spreading down over her chest. The sweet, smoky air was giving her a headache. "I am headed to Canada. I was wondering if you sold any snacks?" He stared at her for a long second, and she got the sinking feeling that Cormac had bailed without paying the tab. "Figures." "Listen," she said. "If you're owed money or something, I don't have it, and I never signed any contract, so you're not going to get it from me." She rubbed the heel of her hand against the itchy skin on her chest. Then she shuffled her feet nervously. Her shoe made a gritty, grinding sound against the floor. She looked down, expecting sand from the lakeshore. Salt? There was a lot of it. At least a cupful. And it was in an elongated pattern as if it had been thrown, rather than spilled. Did that mean someone had tried to defend themselves against a she? Here? Megan was now conscious of the rash slowly spreading across her torso. It was just like the two times before. The killer had been here too. Was that just a coincidence? Or did it mean the killer had been confronted by a she? Or was it possible the killer and the she were one and the same? If that was possible, she had an overwhelming desire to find Cormac and let him know he was on the wrong path, even if he was an ass for leaving her. Slowly, she raised her gaze from the floor. Riley was no longer behind the desk, and his expression had gone from surprise to fury. He grabbed her wrist and spun her around so her back was to his front. "Hey! Quiet!" he ordered. Then he held both of her arms behind her as he pushed her around the desk and through the curtain. Her neck arched with pain when he yanked her arms tighter. An overhead light buzzed and flickered as he pushed her down a dim hallway. She resisted, leaning back and trying to brace herself with her feet, but he was too strong. They'd gone about 15 feet when he pushed her through a doorway into another room. In it, a large man sat, chained to a chair, his body slumped forward. When he lifted his head, Megan sucked in a breath. Cormac. He leveled his eyes at her, and in his agonized expression, Megan saw the crushing pain of a lover betrayed.
Chapter 16. Cormac. 12 hours earlier. As soon as Megan's breathing had fallen into a deep and solid rhythm, Cormac rolled out of the bed, turning away from the vile images tattooed on her back. He had hoped to never see that cross and shamrock again, and certainly never on a body. Megan's body. Did fate really have it in for him so much? He considered what to do. Should he kill her right where she slept? He couldn't imagine she was the Padraig he'd been hunting, but obviously she had some connection. Perhaps she was a spy.
or just sent to distract him. There was no way around it now. He would have to leave. Once she woke, he wouldn't be able to control his rage. He wouldn't even be able to question her without tearing her head off, and then, by Danu, he was weak when it came to her. He'd never be able to forgive himself. And she was one of them. How much more sick and twisted could his life possibly get? Cormac stepped outside the cottage and glanced to the rental office. He still needed to pay last night's bill, but the lights were all off. He didn't want to have to come back here to do it, but now it looked like he'd have no choice. He sighed and moved outside the small yellow arc of the outdoor light, then, with an arch of his neck, transformed into the hound. A moment later, his heavy paws hit the gravel road, and he picked up dust behind him as he barreled towards the woods, breaking through the first line of trees, tearing through the fern and ground cover, dodging low-hanging branches, climbing up and up until he reached the crest of the hill and a familiar thicket. That's where, unable to hold it together anymore, he lifted his nose to the moon and let out a howl of unrestrained agony. He had never gone to Branna before. She had always been the one to initiate contact, but he somehow knew she'd hear him, and that she'd come out. It wasn't as instantaneous as he'd hoped. He had to put his nose to the ground to search for her, but he was right. She wasn't far. He wondered if she was always near. The black rabbit was standing on her hind legs, front legs pulled up, ears shooting straight up like two parallel stalks of grass. Everything about her was still. So still, she could have been a statue, the only exception being her nose, which twitched frantically on high alert. Cormac's head jerked up, then he let out a sigh and lowered his hunches to the ground. He stretched out his front legs and rested his head along their length. Branna hopped closer, poked her head forward, and touched her nose to his paw. A second later, she stood on human legs, looking down at him. "What has she done to you?" Cormac snorted with derision, then shifted. Once the process was complete, he pushed himself to standing and folded his arms. "She came into my life. That's what she did to me." Despite the bitterness and rage built up inside of him, he was jittery from having left Megan behind and alone. She'd fucking turned him into a junkie, and his vile bodily need to return to her made him all the more disgusted with himself. Branna shook her head. "She'd already done that the last time I saw you, and you didn't look like shit." She paused and studied him. Or at least, less like shit. Cormac turned away and stared into the trees. "I need you to do me a favor." "And that would be?" "Find out where she came from." He still couldn't look at Branna. If he did, he was sure she'd see how needy he'd become. She didn't answer right away, but after a couple seconds she said, "You know, she'll still be a Padraig, whatever answer I come up with." She was pushing him for a better explanation, and he knew he had to give it to her. "She's not just a Padraig, Branna. She's one of the Padraigs. She's marked."
"Marked?"
"With the sword and shamrock." Branna reared back, and she whispered in a short, accusatory tone, "You should have told me this before." Cormac turned to face her. "I didn't know it before."
"And you're sure now?"
"Positive. What I don't know is why." A couple beats passed between them, and a couple more. Then Branna scoffed in disbelief. "She couldn't be the one who's plagued the North Shore."
Cormac shook his head.
"I don't think so either. She doesn't have the strength, and she wasn't armed when I found her. But she could be an accomplice, a scout, or a spy."
"Then what does it matter where she came from?"
"I just have to know."
Branna leaned forward, the gold flecks in her dark brown eyes lighting like fire. "What you have to do is end her."
Cormac had a flash of panic. If he didn't do it, Branna would. Pooka's sought revenge over much less, and, in the right form, he knew she was capable of anything. He couldn't let Branna harm Megan, even if it was the right thing to do.
Fuck. How was it possible he was going to betray his family again? It made him hate himself all the more. I will. I'll do it. It was a pathetic lie. But I still want you to find some things out for me. I have more than just one to avenge, and the information could help me end this once and for all. Branna sighed as if she was gathering patience. All right. What do you know about her? Her last name is Walsh. She's originally from Chicago. She was adopted by an aunt and uncle, so that may be their last name as well. Court records, then. I know Adina, who works for Child Protective Services in Cook County. Maybe she can do a search for me. Check addresses on Garrett Street, he said, remembering one of Megan's sketches. Branna raised her eyebrows. I have a hunch. All right, I'll see what I can find. Be careful. Then she crumpled in on herself until all that was left was a small black rabbit darting away, disappearing into the shadows. It took everything Cormac had to return to the cottages by the lake. He entered the rental office shortly after dawn and found the clerk standing just inside the door with a coffee cup in his hand. Sorry it's so early, Cormac said, but I need to pay last night's bill. The clerk's lip curled. I saw you leave. I was going to wait outside for you to come back. Never expected you to come to me. That was an odd response, but whatever. Cormac pulled out his wallet just as the clerk lowered his coffee cup and swung his arm back, then forward. Cormac expected to get doused in hot coffee. Instead, he was showered with a full cup of salt. The pain was instantaneous, and it buckled his knees. He clenched his teeth as his muscles spasmed. He tried to cling to consciousness, but his head grew heavy. His peripheral vision shrunk as the darkness expanded. Eventually, he was looking at the clerk through a tiny pinprick of light. When Cormac finally fell, he didn't even feel his head hit the floor. Cormac came to, not knowing how much time had passed. He was in a small room with a stone fireplace on one wall, similar to the hearth room in his own cottage. However, there was even less for furniture. In fact, he was in the only chair, and he was bound to it by a thick iron chain, the links rusted from time in the elements. The iron wasn't painful like the salt, but it sucked all his energy, leaving him feeling lethargic and heavy. There was no way to transform, or even to tilt. It was all he could do to lift his head when he heard his captor re-enter the room, and his heart seized when he saw he'd returned with his accomplice. Megan. How could he have been such a fool? She'd duped him, and he'd fallen for it. Was she even his fated mate? Had he made that up in his head? Had he only imagined the pull her scent had on his blood, his mind, his body? A red haze filtered over his vision as hatred swept through him. Hatred for Megan, for Riley, but also for himself. Business did he have thinking he could be a savior for the she when he couldn't even save himself? He let his head drop forward, but he jerked it up when he heard Megan whimper. Riley held a hunting knife at her throat. What new sick game is this? Cormac watched, mesmerized, as all the color washed from Megan's face, leaving only the blazing red and blotchy rash on her neck. Her eyes were large and plaintive as they silently begged for Cormac to do something. Her mouth formed the shape of his name, and when a single fat teardrop left a dark spot on her t-shirt above her breast, that's when he realized his mistake. He had it all backwards. Megan had done exactly what he hoped she could do. That rash confirmed the identity of the man he'd been tracking for months. He just never imagined it would turn out like this. Megan wasn't this asshole's accomplice. He had no idea who she was. I've seen the two of you, Riley said. Together. Well, enjoy your last few seconds. I'll get an award for reaching my monthly quota so quickly, and the world is just a little bit better with two less of you. Let her go, Cormac growled. She's not like me. Not a dog, huh? He asked. Doesn't matter. One of your kind is as unnatural as any other.
She's not one of the she, Cormac said. She's no one.
She's everything.
Just a Pádraig, like you.
If that were true, you wouldn't care about her.
He jerked Megan's head back, exposing more of her neck to the knife.
I swear,
Cormac cried, his panic doing more to prove the asshole's theory than his own point.
I'll prove it. Check her left shoulder.
Riley looked at Cormac skeptically, but then he roughly yanked back the collar of Megan's t-shirt. She gasped and her head snapped back, the cotton ripped, exposing the vile tattoo that Cormac now hoped might save her life. Unfortunately, it only made things worse.
The sword and shamrock?
Riley asked, as if he couldn't believe it. His voice dropped to a whisper.
Your Black Castle? And you're with him? Please,
Megan whimpered.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Traitor!
He gave Megan a rough shake.
You would associate with these vermin?
Cormac struggled against his chains while Megan closed her eyes and held her body still. The bastard was going to kill her right in front of him. Was he cursed? Was everyone he loved destined to die? Once again, he found himself wondering how to turn back time.
We've been working to exterminate the North Shore for decades, Riley hissed. The ground is thick with them here. Even I have four under my belt, and I've only been here a few weeks.
Cormac's gut twisted as he counted the victims backwards.
Four made sense. That was when he lost the trail and had to start tracking a fresh scent. And now they had Megan.
Well, Riley might as well kill him too. If she died, he couldn't live with himself.
Slaying one of the dogs, however.
Riley narrowed his eyes on Cormac. Not just a dog, but the dog who's been sniffing around, making things difficult. Because of you, our resources have become dangerously thin, what with having to send someone new in every month. I can't wait to report back that I have taken out a true monster.
So Cormac's theory had been right. No wonder his mission had been so impossible to complete.
Megan whimpered, and Riley turned his neck to look at her, almost as if he'd forgotten he was holding a knife to her throat. He dragged his nose along her temple, and Cormac roared.
I was going to take you out first, dog, Riley said, his nose still in Megan's hair. But a traitor to our cause deserves no mercy.
He pressed the tip of the knife against Megan's throat, just enough for a single drop of blood to trickle toward her collar. Megan's body went rigid. She closed her eyes and rose up on her toes, as if bracing against certain death.
Megan!
Cormac cried. She made a strangled sound in response, and her terrified eyes flashed open, their gazes locked. She blinked. And then, she was gone. Riley's body collapsed forward, and his arms closed around air.
What? Where?
It was the first time Cormac agreed with the twisted bastard.
Where had Megan gone?
Here,
she said, and Cormac and Riley both turned their heads toward the sound of her voice. She was standing against the stone wall, and in her hands was a fireplace poker. Her face took on a look of grim determination, and then she swung.
Chapter 17. Megan. The air whistled as Megan sliced through it with the poker. Riley's skull made a sickening crack when she made contact, and it broke open like a melon. Blood and bits of gray matter erupted, splattering the floor and Megan's face. Riley's body folded jerkily, like an accordion, first at the knees, then the ankles, the neck and waist, until he fell to the ground at Megan's feet. She felt joy, power, relief. She would not be the one to die today. Neither would Cormac. But no sooner did the euphoria hit her than a cold chill crept along her arms. What had she done? Then came the tremors. The fireplace poker fell to the floor with a loud, heavy clatter, and she staggered backward out of the expanding pool of blood. Riley was dead. She'd killed him.
I've got to go, she whispered. Megan, Cormac said warily, but he did nothing to correct her.
I've got to get out of here. She'd kill the man. There'd be a report. Police. Cormac would be gone and unable to corroborate her story. No one would believe her.
How did you do that?
He asked. I just picked it up, and I swung. The truth was, she didn't know how she'd done it. She'd never done anything violent before in her whole life, and she had no idea how she'd gotten away from Riley either, or how the poker came to be in her hands. One moment she had a knife to her throat, the next second she was across the room.
No, he barked. I mean, how did you tilt like that?
What? Tilt? What was he talking about? She needed to sit down. No, what was she thinking? She had to get the hell out of there. Cormac jerked forward and the chains rattled. Get the key. It's on his belt. Get me out of this. What? She heard him talking, but her brain still wasn't processing.
The key, Megan.
Cormac was getting impatient, but the last thing she wanted was to get closer to Riley's lifeless body.
The key, he said.
A thick path of dark blood had seeped out of Riley's cracked skull and was crawling across the floor toward her.
Oh, God.
She was going to throw up. She tried not to think of it and, with shaking legs, took a stiff-legged step. And then another. She crouched and unhooked the thin chain from his belt loop and pulled the other end from his pocket until a silver ring with several keys popped free.
Good girl,
Cormac said. Hurry. Megan moved robotically, but she found the right key on the second try, and the heavy iron chain snaked off Cormac's body. He inhaled deeply and let out a freeing breath. A second later, he was on his feet and turning toward her.
Megan.
You left, she said, her voice quaking. None of this would have happened if he'd stayed. I thought I could trust you, and you left. A look of pained regret passed across his face.
I can explain.
How? She cried. What was there to explain? He left. They'd both been attacked, and now a man was dead.
Not here, he said, his body tight. We need to get out of here.
He was right about that. It was midday. Had anyone been around to see her enter the front door? If they had, it would be suspicious if they never saw her come back out. Or should she walk out calmly as if all she'd done was return a key? She didn't have answers to any of those questions, but one thing was clear.
I need to change my clothes first.
Cormac looked down at the blood splatter on her chest and nodded. Grab my wallet, too. It's probably on the floor. Megan left the room in a rush, cleaned her face and hands, and grabbed her suitcase. She changed her clothes, found Cormac's wallet under the desk, then raced back into the hearth room. She handed her bloody shirt to Cormac, hoping he'd know what to do with the evidence. He balled it up in his large hand, and his arms encircled her.
I'm going to tilt you again.
There was that word. She still didn't know what it meant, but she instinctively braced.
Don't worry, he said. You've done it twice before.
Is that what I did? Is that how? She glanced toward the fireplace. He shook his head in disbelief, and when she looked back at him, he was giving her a small smile as if he couldn't quite believe it.
Aye, you did. But we're going to go farther this time, so it will be much more disorienting. More like the first time I tilted you.
Okay, she said, though she barely had any memory of the first time. All she remembered was Cormac's relief that he hadn't killed her. She continued to hold herself rigid in his arms, the same way she braced before riding the slingshot at the state fair. And then, for the second time in the last couple minutes, her bones went liquid. She was sucked into the dark and spinning channel that stretched all light and sound. Right when she thought she'd be torn to pieces, she found herself standing outside a Bavarian-style restaurant and bar. Cormac tossed her bloody shirt into one of the barrel bonfires positioned outside the door.
How?
She asked, stumbling to regain her balance. Cormac's expression was grim. He looked her up and down, then gave a nod.
It's coming easier to you. I was worried you'd go unconscious again.
Why are we here? Megan asked, not wanting to remember the experience. Her body still wasn't 100%, and her legs felt rubbery and unable to support her. Cormac curled an arm around her waist. We're here to get lost in a crowd and to give ourselves an alibi. He opened the door and pushed her inside. The place was packed. A polka band was playing at one end of the room, and some of the tables were pushed back to make a dance floor, which meant the seating was cramped. Waitresses in traditional German dresses covered in Oktoberfest pins maneuvered deftly between the tables while carrying large steins of beer. "Relax," Cormac scolded her. "Look natural." Megan didn't know what natural meant anymore, and she couldn't imagine Cormac ever going unnoticed, so she laughed humorlessly. "And then what?" "And then," he said, "we get a beer, because you have a lot of explaining to do." "I'm not the only one," she muttered as she scanned the crowd. Was anyone looking at her? Could they read her crime written on her forehead? The last thing she wanted was to be in a crowd. How had she let Cormac bring her here? "No," he agreed. "You're not the only one. Look, there's an empty table in the corner." They grabbed it, Cormac growling at some guy who tried to swoop in ahead of them. And when a waitress swung by with a tray, Cormac raised his credit card in the air. The waitress set two frosty beers on the table and they sloshed over the rim. She swiped Cormac's card, giving them their alibi. "I don't think I can drink this," Megan said. Her stomach was so twisted, anything she put in her body was sure to beat a quick escape. "Just like I should have done." "You don't have to drink it," Cormac said, raising his glass to his mouth. "But it's part of blending in."
"If you say so."
He took a sip, set his glass down on the table, then wiped the foam from his upper lip. His face took on a serious expression.
"Tell me about your tattoo."
"Tell me why you left," she countered. "And what the hell that note was about." Cormac's eyes narrowed, and she could nearly see the dog snarling behind his dark eyes. "All of these topics are part of the same conversation," he said.
"You start."
Megan's breath stuttered in her throat. He was angry, and she didn't fully understand why. She let out the air, then started in. "My aunt and uncle had a painting by their front door of a green shamrock crossed by a sword. When I left, the first thing I did was get that same image tattooed on my back."
"Why? I didn't think you liked them much."
Obviously, he didn't believe her explanation.
"I didn't. I hated them."
She raised her stein and took a sip. The beer was good. Cold. But she still couldn't relax. She couldn't even fake it, and she grimaced as she swallowed.
"Then why the memento?"
he asked. "I like to collect reminders of where I've been. The good, the bad, and the ugly." She swept her hand over the stickers on her suitcase. The hot dog from Chicago, the St. Louis Arch, and Paisley Park. "It's not just the stickers. I've collected other things from my travels, too."
"Like the snow globe?"
he asked. "You've seen that?"
"When I found you on the hilltop, I saw it in your bag along with the sketch pad."
She nodded. "I know it's pathetic, but they help me remember where I've been, and who I am, I guess. I put the tattoo on my back to signify that I'd survived that period of my life, and they were now in my rearview mirror. I was turning my back on them." He tipped his head to the side and stared at her for a while, probably assessing whether she was telling the truth. Before he could pass judgment, she jumped in with her own question. "Now, why did you leave?" His eyebrows came together in confusion, as if the answer should be obvious.
"Because that image you tattooed on your body is the symbol of the Black Castle. I saw it when you were sleeping. I figured you were one of them and you were trying to trap me, so I got the hell out."
Megan felt an icy chill slide over her shoulders, and it took a second before she remembered the same picture on the desk in the rental office. When she did, the meaning of it all hit her at full force.
"My aunt and uncle are like... Riley?"
That couldn't be right. Her aunt and uncle weren't killers. They watched 60 Minutes and reruns of MASH, for Christ's sake. Every week they went to their social club meet...
Oh, shit. Oh, shit!
They called their group the BC. All this time she thought it was a bunch of history buffs, but BC stood for Black Castle? Cormac's face went stony, and he confirmed her conclusion.
Aye. Why else would they have the emblem in their home?
Megan's heart pounded against her sternum. Now she really was going to be sick.
"And because of my tattoo, you thought
I was one of them? You thought I meant to hurt you? Cormac leaned in closer, with his forearm on the table. I thought you meant to trick me so that someone else could hurt me. Megan blinked. But I would never hurt you. I believe you. He curled his hand over hers, and his statement carried such solemnity that it sent a shudder running through her. She turned her hand over, palm up, and laced her fingers together with his. He gave her a squeeze. And I'm so sorry I left. She blinked back tears. Everyone eventually wants rid of me. I knew it was only a matter of time. I thought it was weird you would go so soon after asking me to help you, but I figured you came to your senses. Cormac leaned in again, this time giving her knee a squeeze with his other hand. I won't ever want to be rid of you. Megan wished he hadn't said that. It would make it worse when he finally did. You will, eventually. It's okay. I wouldn't expect... He shook his head. What I mean to say is, I can't leave you. What? Now he wasn't making sense. I left, but I came back. I told myself it was only because I had to pay for last night's fee, but that wasn't all of it. After I paid, my plan was to check on you. Check on me? Why? You just said you wouldn't have seen me. I had no plans to ever speak to you again, but I had to make sure. He sat back and bowed his head. That you were safe. She stared at him in confusion. You thought I was the enemy, and you still wanted me to be safe? It was nice what he said. It had been a long time since anyone cared. But something had shifted for her. A roof, food, a real bed with pillows. These had been huge motivators in the past. But ever since meeting Cormac, ever since entering his world, she wouldn't admit it to herself before, but she would give up all of these comforts if it meant she'd never lose him. I want something more now, she said. Something more than just to be safe. He nodded as if he understood. Well, that's fine, because obviously I can't give you safety. What I can give you, all I can give you, is me. It's not much, but it is forever. Megan swallowed hard, enjoying but still not believing what he said. Forever was what people said in the moment. It wasn't ever real. No, Cormac. Think. The rash I got around Riley, it was unique to him. I know that. And by the sound of his voice, it seemed like he already understood her point. She continued, just to make sure. If I can't help you find anyone else, I'm no more use to you. Cormac shook his head like she was being funny. Don't brush this off, she said. I want to know what's next, and before you think I'm being incredibly clingy, don't worry. I'm not suggesting you bring me home with you and make me the little woman. She said this last part with so much sarcasm she nearly choked on it. A large lump rose in Cormac's throat, then he swallowed it down. That's what's supposed to happen, isn't it? But of course I can't bring you home now, can I? Not until I finish what I started. And if I can't bring you home, I'm the first Kushi since creation to fail as Anamkara. Megan was used to Cormac using words she didn't understand. This was a new one. His what? Cormac wouldn't look her in the eye. Instead, he focused on his finger, which he ran along the condensation on the outside of his stein. Anamkara. My fated mate. Then he looked up. You're mine, Methuselah. I've known it for a while. Megan's eyebrows drew together, then up, and she jerked her head back. Mate? Cormac turned his head and looked at her out of the side of his eye. Isn't that what we're talking about? Bringing you home, being the little woman? No. Sweet Jesus, has he lost his mind? Mate? Fuck, he muttered, his cheeks flushing. Cormac, is this just because of what, happened with me tilting? She still didn't understand how she'd done it, but had that one small, weird act made Cormac see her differently? Like maybe he now saw her as someone more like him? He shook his head. We still need to talk about how you did that, but no. I knew you were my Anamkara the moment I saw you trying to build that fire. She thought he was trying to make a joke, so she retorted, because you're inexplicably attracted to idiots with no survival skills? No, he said, and his tone was not joking. Not at all. He was deadly serious. Because, if you believe the stories my dad used to tell me, at the moment of your birth, Danu scribed your sins in my nose and drew your face on my heart. You're under my skin, Megan. I can't change that. It's the way it works in our world. I just never expected our paths to cross. And heaven knows I sure as hell don't deserve you. Megan stared at him for a beat, then another, waiting for the punchline. It didn't come. Instead, Cormac continued to stare at her expectantly. She needed to say something.
Cormac?
Aye. You're crazy. She let that sit there for a second, both for his benefit and for hers, because if his brand of crazy meant he wanted her, really wanted her when no one else did, then maybe it wasn't so bad. She inhaled. But maybe I'm okay with that. Megan leaned forward, grateful that they'd found a table in a dark corner. Apparently sensing her intent, Cormac met her halfway. She slipped her hand along the side of his neck and drew him closer. He let her lead the way. That is, right up until her lips pressed against his and she opened to him. Then he took over, diving in and deepening their kiss. So much for being inconspicuous. A wave of heat flooded the surface of Megan's skin, starting between her legs and blazing upward for her hairline. Her heart raced as if trying to break free, and she might have jumped him right there, if not for the grating sound of someone very close, clearing her throat. They jerked apart, and Megan touched her swollen lips with her fingertips. Seriously, I can't keep up. Branna lowered herself onto a chair. Branna, Cormac said, as if warning her not to say anything more. For one thing, she said, ignoring him, you're in a public place in the middle of the afternoon. For another, is she some vile untouchable or the fucking holy grail? For the love of Danu, make up your goddamn mind, McConnell. What are you doing here? Megan asked, feeling braver than the last time she met the Pooka. Perhaps that confidence came from the knowledge she'd rescued her fated mate from the clutches of an evil madman. In fact, for the first time since their escape, Megan felt like a bit of a badass. Maybe she really could be Cormac's equal partner. Branna raised one eyebrow at her and retrieved, seemingly from out of nowhere, a large gold-colored envelope. She laid it on the table and placed both her hands, palms down, on top of it. Cormac eyed the envelope cautiously. His eyes flicked to Megan before he reached out and drew it toward him. What's that? Megan asked. Something I asked Branna to look into, he said. Megan studied his guilty expression for a couple seconds, then the truth dawned. Meaning me. You saw my tattoo and wanted to get the dirt on whether I was the enemy. Meaning you, Branna confirmed. And hold on to your mortal realm, Colleen, because things are about to get a tad bit crazy. Megan's gaze swung to Branna, then back to Cormac. She didn't have it in her to be pissed. Lives were on the line. She would have done the same thing if the tables were turned and if she'd had the resources. I wanted to know how and why you ended up in the Black Castle, Cormac explained. But I'm not in the Black Castle. I know that now, he said, as if she were being obtuse. Now I want to know how you ended up in the household of two of its members. But I told you that already, too. My dad left, my mom died, my aunt and uncle took me in. Cormac looked to Branna as if he wasn't convinced. Branna's expression was equally doubtful. Megan huffed and leaned back in her chair, mumbling. Great. Take me for a liar. I assume you've already read the file? Cormac asked Branna. She nodded. Cormac slid the envelope to Megan. This is about you. Do you want to open it? Cormac, Branna said, and this time she sounded genuinely concerned. It was a tone of voice Megan had never heard from her before, and that got her attention more than anything. Branna continued, shooting Megan a worried look. There are things in there that... What? He asked. Branna pinched her lips together with indecision. I'm just saying, There are some things in there she probably doesn't want to see. Megan folded her hands in her lap and stared at the envelope, leaving it untouched on the table. She wondered how much more she could take in one day. I'm not going to open it. If you've read it, just tell me. Branna exchanged a look with Cormac. Then she nodded and pulled her chair in close. This is a copy of your Cook County Child Protection file. It includes a court order for your adoption, plus a related police report. I have to tell you, something about the police report doesn't feel quite right. And there's a photograph with it. It's not pretty. Megan looked up. She wanted to ask who was in the photo. Why wasn't it pretty? What did she mean that it wasn't quite right? But she couldn't find her voice. According to the child protection reports, your father left when you were 4, Branna said. Megan clenched her jaw. There was a dead body back at the rental office, a dead body who was somehow connected to her aunt and uncle. She didn't have time for a trip down memory lane. Your mother got sick shortly after that. The presumption was she was using drugs. She insisted she wasn't, but she wouldn't consent to UAs. What are UAs? Cormac asked. Court-ordered drug tests. Peeing in a cup, Branna explained. Child Protection stepped in. They wanted your mother to take the test and get involved in a treatment program. They were willing to keep you in her custody so long as she was working a program. No, Megan thought. It couldn't be that simple. Her mother loved her. Her mother would have done anything for them to stay together. When she refused, the judge found it wasn't in your best interest to stay in your mother's custody and you were placed in foster care. Megan shook her head. This is all wrong. My mom died from an overdose and my aunt and uncle took me in after she died. I was 5, I remember. Branna stared at her with a look of supreme sympathy, and, coming from Branna, this was extremely unnerving. Were her memories wrong? Was it possible that her mother was still... My mom, Megan said, shivering against the chill that ran down her spine. She is dead, isn't she? As much as she desperately wanted Branna to say no, the thought that she'd been alive all this time and hadn't reached out to her was more than Megan could take. I believe she is, Branna said. Megan let out a breath. Branna continued, but not because of drugs. Cormac leaned forward again. What's your theory? It's only a theory, Branna said. But I think it's a decent one given you didn't kill Megan outright when you tilted her out of that bar. Megan and Cormac shared a quick glance. Then they both looked at Branna. Megan tilted herself, Cormac said. Independently, not 1 hour ago. You did? Branna asked, turning to face Megan. There was a flash of interest in her eyes. It was a high-stress situation, Cormac said, as if that should explain everything. It just happened. Then that confirms my theory, Branna said, breathing out. Confirms what? Megan asked. You're a halfling, Branna said. Halfling? That didn't sound politically correct. It certainly didn't sound like it was akin to winning the genetic lottery. A halfling? Half of what? Best guess, your mother was a she. That's why she wouldn't take their drug tests. The results would have been confusing to the examiner. What clan? Cormac asked. Megan's heart was beating in her throat, keeping time with the polka band at the end of the room, which was transitioning into roll out the barrel. Judging by the fact her father stuck around for as long as he did, I think her mother was likely a Lenanshi. Megan jerked back, nearly tipping her chair. Oh no. Oh, no. At this point, she was willing to accept almost any revelation Branna wanted to make, but not that. Not that. I'm like those spider women in the woods? Megan's head whipped to Cormac and his expression was completely flat. Oh, God. It was bad enough when she thought he'd put her out for being too normal. Now he'd put her out for being a monster. Cormac's jaw got tense. Don't worry. You're not like them. How would you know that? Megan asked, sounding desperate. Sucked anyone dry lately? Branna asked blandly.
No!
She exclaimed, as if she needed to convince them of it. Branna made a sound of impatience.